"This is a republic if you can keep it," with former Democratic Party Chairman Mark Brewer and former Republican Party Executive Director Jeff Timmer.
I'm Mark Brewer, and this is the Classified Documents edition of A Republic If You Can Keep It.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Among our non-classified documents this week, polling that shows a big lead for Gretchen Whitmer and for reproductive freedom. We'll be joined by pollster Bernie Porn from Epic MRA with the numbers.
We'll also talk with Detroit News reporter Craig Mauger about the semi-united state Republican convention last weekend, as well as potential new legal problems for Republican Attorney General candidate Matt DiPerno. The latest polling on Michigan's November election has a lot of good news for Democrats. Joining us with the details is Bernie Porn from Epic MRA Public Opinion Research, one of Michigan's best pollsters. So, welcome. We're very excited to talk to you today. Now we're in the home stretch, about 10 weeks to go before the general election we've all been anticipating. And we want to get the latest prognostication and analysis from you on what's going on at the top of the ticket.
Well, there's been a lot of movement since our last poll. And in this one, it was an omnibus poll. There was folks that were buying questions on it, which other questions that were asked on the survey, we'll be releasing them next week, and you'll know all about it then. It's going to be a topic which the president is touching upon at this moment. So that may give you an idea of what it may be, but it will be interesting. But main part that has already been released to their media clients is for the race for governor. And there's been a dramatic shift. Tudor Dixon, with the ads from the Democratic Governors Association, has gotten to be much better known, but not particularly well-liked. She has a 35% unfavorable rating, including 28% very unfavorable, 22% favorable, 23% say they don't recognize her, and 20% say that they recognize her, but do not have an opinion of her. At the same time, the governor has 48% favorable, 43% unfave. That's down a couple points from the last time we tested. President Biden is at 53% unfave, 38% favorable, and his job rating is at 30% positive job rating and 69% negative job rating. However, that does not seem to have had an impact on Gretchen Whitmer. The other thing that is important to note is that we had a rotated list of issues, and the top issue that came out of this survey was abortion at 19%, followed by education, and then infrastructure, state and local government spending, and then addressing gun violence, which will give you a little bit of an idea what next week's topic may be, and then affordable health care, crime and drugs. And in the matchup between Whitmer and Dixon, a 50 to 39% lead for Whitmer. And when you look at the breakdown, she is getting 94% of Democrats and also 50 to 22% of independent voters, while Dixon is getting 83% of Republicans and Whitmer is getting 8% of Republicans. In the race for attorney general, you've got 86% of Democrats going for Nessel, 42 to 21% of independents going for Nessel as well, and 83%, the same percentage for Dixon, going for DiPerno of Republicans. And Karamo is getting 80% of Republicans, and Benson 42 to 21 of independents, and 88 to 5% of Benson is getting of Democrats. And the other thing that is important is we asked about the abortion issue on the ballot, and 67% are voting for the abortion proposal, and 58% say that they are pro-choice on the abortion issue. So there's a difference between those who claim to be pro-choice and those who are voting for the abortion proposal. And the difference is 24% of pro-life voters are supporting the proposal, which I found incredibly interesting. And among Republicans, 40% are also supporting it. 46%, a plurality, are voting against it. And even more surprisingly, 67% of Catholic voters are supporting the proposal. And so you've got some real interesting dynamics there. And abortion clearly has had a dramatic impact on the election. And you've got national estimates from the Cook Report and others who are saying that Democrats are favored, and also on 538, are favored to not only retain but maybe expand their number of senators. And instead of having up to 30 or more House Democrats lost, they're estimating that it may be 10 to 20. And that may change as yet, because abortion is having, I think, a profound impact. And if we can, in Michigan, get on some other issues which have not been touched upon yet. For one thing, you've got Tudor Dixon supporting Betsy DeVos's proposal for funding for private schools from public dollars. And as we know from previous polling, that is opposed by a plurality. And when they hear the negative messages against it, a significant majority opposes it. And the final issue that I think can have an impact is that Dixon and the Republicans believe the big lie in terms of Trump winning the election in 2020. Independent voters disagree with that, as well as Democrats almost unanimously disagree with that and say that Biden won fair and square. And there are not that many general election Republicans who believe at this juncture that Trump actually won the election. There is a high number among Republican primary voters, but among general election Republicans, it is not as great. It's about 10 points less. And in a nutshell, that is what we found in the survey. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, no, it's a fascinating breakdown. You've summed it up there in your analysis of the poll, the way that abortion has become the kind of the overarching issue in this campaign to date, or in the voters' minds to date, how it seems to be organizing the enthusiasm about the election, and has really changed the dynamic. Where in the spring we saw the Republicans were much more energized and enthused since the Dobbs/Roe decision. I think nationally the prognostication has been more it's turned into a kind of a neutral environment, but it could actually start to benefit the Democrats when people start their early voting here in the next few weeks.
As a matter of fact, Whitmer is getting 64% of those who plan to vote by absentee ballot, and that raises an interesting issue in terms of the timing of the debates. Because Whitmer is more than willing to debate in October, and Tudor Dixon claims now all of a sudden they like the idea of absentee balloting, and she wants the opportunity to have the debate before the ballots go out for absentee balloting. But I'm not sure that she's going to have that much of a chance, even if there were earlier debates, to really cut in to Whitmer's lead among absentee voters.
Well, I think it's safe to say from watching races like this play out over the years, it's the incumbent who is going to set the terms and the timing of the debates more so than the challenger. The challenger always does what Tudor Dixon, or usually does what Tudor Dixon is doing. They want more encounters with the incumbent, and they want them earlier. And the incumbent says, no, you're going to meet me on my turf on my time. And so I think that's what we should expect, is whatever Whitmer wants, that's what we'll see.
Bernie, you gave us a lot to unpack there. So, my Republican colleague here, a former Republican colleague.
Yeah, don't work me.
sorry, Jeff. No, honest analysis. I'll give him that. Let me restrain his enthusiasm for the Democratic ticket here for a moment. we're still 10 weeks out. And I noticed, Bernie, and this is not to be critical, I just want to ask, I didn't hear any economic issues among those issues that you recited. Did voters not express an opinion on that? I mean, do we have any read on where the economy and inflation is in all this?
We did not include inflation because that is a national issue. Notwithstanding the fact that Tom Barrett and a lot of Republicans are saying, you elect me and I'm going to solve the inflation issue, which they don't exactly explain how they're going to do that. But the economy and jobs, we did include a rating of the Michigan economy, and I neglected to mention that. 60% give a negative rating to the economy in Michigan, and so that is still an issue. 45 to 35% say that the state is headed in the wrong direction, off on the wrong track. That is not that bad as compared as it was the last time. Instead of 10 points, it was about 15 or 16 points differential. So that's improving. And on when you compare that to national polls about the direction of the country, you've got 65 to 70% in just about all polls saying that the country is off on the wrong, in the wrong direction. And so 45 to 35 is not that bad in Michigan, given what we've been through with COVID and everything else. The other thing that's important is that the Republican candidates, Tudor Dixon, DiPerno, and Caramo, all take the extreme position, although I guess Tudor Dixon has tried to walk that back a little bit in terms of abortion. And in the primary poll that we did, we asked primary Republicans if, in fact, the nominee had an extreme position on abortion, no exceptions, whether or not that would make them more or less likely to win the general election. And 55% of Republicans said they would be less likely to win the general election if they took that extreme position. And I think that's why you're seeing on the abortion ballot proposal a significant one out of four pro-life voters supporting it, and such a high percentage of Catholic voters supporting it.
On that, it sounds like Right to Life in the Catholic Church have got a lot of work to do to consolidate what they would normally consider their base in terms of opposition, even though I will note that there are a lot of Catholics, particularly on these kinds of issues, that do not necessarily follow the church in terms of its teachings and its positions. But I do expect to see a lot of money put into that proposal, against that proposal from the Catholic Church, the Catholic Conference here in Michigan, as well as Right to Life and others. If I can, Bernie, what's always interesting to look at, and you touched on this a little bit already, are the trends. The trends, because now you've got data over several months, and you adverted to that in terms of this. So it looks like, at least at this point, the trends, you know, issues of choice, the governor's favorability, even the economy here in Michigan, even though the perception is still not great, tend to be in the Democrats' favor, at least at the top of the ticket. Fair assessment?
Absolutely. And the vision about the economy, that is actually changing. It has been worse in previous polling. And so having 60%, that's a few points better. Not a lot, but a few points better than it has been in the past.
So it looks like those DGA ads, of which there have been millions run in the last several weeks against Tudor Dixon on abortion, are having some impact in terms of certainly her unfavorables and highlighting this issue of abortion.
And that's before there's any discussion about the funding for private schools or more direct discussion about the big lie, so to speak, in terms of Trump being favored about winning the 2020 election among Republicans.
Yeah, I think if Gretchen Whitmer goes on to win this race and the analysis of this campaign is written, I think it can allowing nearly a month of negative ads against Tudor Dixon when she was a relative unknown to general election voters will prove to be a fatal error. And, you know, it seldom works well for a challenger once they get defined to then dig themselves out of the hole that they find themselves in. Now, as Labor Day is approaching, Tudor Dixon is definitely in a hole. It certainly could change. If gas prices were to spike, if we get another, you know, some unexpected economic news, certainly, we've seen a very fluid macro environment later in the election season than we have in any time in my recent memory. I'd much rather hear on August 30th be Gretchen Whitmer than Tudor Dixon.
Yeah. So these unfavorable numbers, I was particularly attracted by Bernie back in 2006 when we were running against DeVos. Our goal was to try to get DeVos to unfavorable 50% by election day. We did. It took a heck of a messaging campaign that year. He had a great issue that he handed to us. So those unfaves are of great interest to me. Well, Bernie, let me do this. Suppose a miracle happened and tomorrow Tudor Dixon called you and said, we want to hire you to give us advice how to get us out of this hole. In all your data and all your analysis and experience, my friend, what would you say to her? What does she now need to do in the next 10 weeks to try to pull this out?
Well, what they are doing, and that is trying to connect Gretchen Whitmer to Joe Biden, given his low numbers. However, those are improving. Try to connect them to the inflation issue and the high price. Whitmer has already addressed that somewhat in her ads. I would have done it a little bit differently instead of saying, I can't solve the inflation issue. I think she should have said no governor can solve the inflation issue. And the other issue is that inflation, I don't know whether Tudor Dixon has gone to the gas station lately, but it's a lot less to fill up a tank than it was a week ago, a lot less than it was 2 weeks ago. And so that is somewhat becoming a relief in terms of the cost of the gas pump, but also it's going to have a lessening effect on inflation overall once that makes it through the economy in terms of the reduced cost of gasoline. Now, you've got that refinery that is down for a few days. That could cause a spike in gas prices, but barring that, I think it continues to show reductions in gas prices and probably a reduction in the cost of living. And when you think about elimination of cost, you've got the student loan forgiveness issue that certainly Whitmer can claim as an important milestone for Democrats. And you've got other things in terms of health care reductions of cost for citizens that I think will make a big difference. And that the inflation reduction issue, I think, will be helpful.
If we can, Bernie, can we turn to the two other top of the ticket races that you've analyzed and polled frequently now? I'd welcome your contrast to what's going on in the governor's race. Clearly less name recognition there. You know, we just got through a contentious convention. It could have been worse for the Republicans, could have been better. What do you see going on there? The trends in both the Attorney General and Secretary of State's race, and what do those Republican candidates need to do to try to pull this out?
Well, you've got serious name recognition problems for both of them, DiPerno and Caramo, and neither one of them have been up with ads as yet that I'm aware of. And so a lot's going to depend on when they're up with ads, because you've got 79% not recognizing DiPerno and 78% not recognizing Caramo. And they're communicating with their Republicans on their emails and so forth. But if they aren't up with ads in terms of TV advertising, they're not going to be well known. Now, those two offices, they are never really well known. When Dick Austin, and I just was interviewed by Scuba Cundis, when Dick Austin was defeated, he had about 30% after all his years that did not recognize his name. Even when Frank Kelly was running for re-election during some of those years, you had 20% not recognizing his name when he was up on the ballot. So those two offices are not as well known as the governor's office and the person who holds that office. And so right now you've got 44 and 45% not recognizing Nessel and not recognizing Benson. And so once DiPerno and Caramo began advertising, I'm sure that Benson and Nessel will begin advertising. And the last election, don't forget that Nessel was close in terms of the election, and it appears that she is closer with a 4-point lead, 43-39, than Benson is at 6 points with 44-38. And so those are going to be closer elections, although as you near the election, usually you have whatever is happening at the governor's race having a serious impact and influence on the two statewide races below them. And you will end up with still a significant percentage not recognizing their names, but they will get the Democratic vote if there's a strong Democratic turnout for Whitmer that will filter down the ballot.
Yeah, I think both the incumbents, Nessel and Benson, have significant advantage when it comes to cash and when they're going to be able to start advertising. As of the pre-convention reports, Nessel had 20 times the cash on hand that Matt DiPerno had, and Jocelyn Benson has nearly 15 times the amount of cash that Christina Caramo has. And it's hard to get name ID when you don't have any money to buy it. And between Nessel or between DiPerno and Caramo right now, you know, they don't even have $500,000 to share between the two of them, let alone for one campaign. And so they are way, way behind when it comes to spending and are going to be reliant on third parties, the state party possibly doing some advertising on their behalf. Or if, you know, the word on the street is accurate, they can expect a bunch of money coming directly into their races, that they're going to be if riding a Tudor Dixon wave, if there's going to be one or not. Will how she does will have great impact on how they do, is the way it looks. As we still have 10 weeks to go, but again, those incumbents are in very good position and possibly in position to even outperform Governor Whitmer if she were to win at the end of the day. I look back at 2006 when Mark talked about Granholm running against DeVos. Two Republican incumbents for Secretary Terry Lynn Land and Mike Cox were able to win significantly because they were going up against very underfunded candidates. And so they were able to kind of defy that partisan gravity and run, 10, 12 points above where Dick DeVos was running, and both finished in the mid-50s, if I remember correctly.
I believe you're right.
Yeah, it looks like, Caramo and DiPerno, as much as Tudor Dixon wants debates, I think DiPerno and Caramo desperately need debates to get some exposure and possibly go after the incumbents. But I expect the incumbents will be as cagey there as Governor Whitmer is in terms of debate opportunities. It also strikes me, I'm listening to these candidates, and they don't seem to be pivoting. I mean, I think Dixon's pivoting toward broader issues, more beyond the Republican base. DiPerno a little bit, but Caramo, every time she talks, doubling down on her extreme position on abortion, on yoga as Satanism. I mean, it seems to me for the two incumbents, if they choose to, there's a heck of an opportunity here to negatively define those two if they feel that there's a need, because they're undefined. And they have got positions that, according to your research, Bernie, confirmed by others, no disrespect intended, are bad issues. And when voters are educated about them, about what DiPerno believes, what he's done, same with Caramo, could drive their unfavorables up even further than they are now.
I think you're right. And one other thing is that as you defined DeVos back in the previous gubernatorial election, do not forget there was a recent poll showing that Betsy DeVos has only an 8% favorability rating in Michigan. And so if the Whitmer campaign does not show pictures of Betsy DeVos and Tudor Dixon and even the other Republican candidates, I would be surprised. If I were king for a day, I would certainly be doing that for the Democrats whenever possible.
If the campaign doesn't, there's plenty of third-party super PACs and surrogates and others who will. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, because she is not popular at all in Michigan. And her proposal is not popular either, although it is likely to get approved if it is certified, because the game plan is to simply have the Republican-controlled legislature, maybe even in the lame duck, approve of Betsy DeVos proposal.
Well, I'd be very surprised if the certification takes place any time in calendar year 2022. It's not germane to this ballot in November, and I know that the staff at the Bureau of Elections is spread thin right now, dealing with the getting the ballots ready and getting the wording for these initiatives that will be on the ballot, and will be busy through the fall. So I know that the Republicans and the financial backers like the DeVos's will be pushing to have that certification done. Politically, I don't see any advantage to the administration at the Bureau of Elections or the State Department to do anything with that yet this year.
Yeah, me too, as a lawyer for the opposition. Bernie, in our remaining time, though, I did want to touch on the ballot proposal that is going to be on the ballot, and we've talked about it a little bit so far, and that's the reproductive freedom proposal. You had some extraordinary numbers there. We talked a little about earlier about people that you would expect to be opposing it, actually supporting it. I think you said nearly two-thirds of the people in your poll indicated they would vote for it. What's going on there? What's your read? Is that helping with Democratic voter enthusiasm? Is it having an impact up ticket? I mean, is this one of those instances where a ballot proposal actually does help turn out and help candidates above it on the ballot? What's your take on all that?
Well, remember Dorothy said, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that to a large extent we are in Kansas. And what happened there is very likely to happen in Michigan and in many other states, where you had almost like 200,000 people voting just on the ballot proposal who did not vote in any of the either the Democratic or the Republican primary elections. And I think you're likely to see a higher turnout for the ballot proposal maybe than people participating in the election for supporting Tudor Dixon. I would not be surprised if there is an influence in pulling people to the polls to vote for that ballot proposal, and they're also going to be voting for Governor Whitmer because of her position. And every Democratic candidate ought to be pointing out Republican candidate's position or incumbent's position on abortion and also on other issues.
Bernie, you just mentioned something that sounds like something that should concern Democrats, that there might be a lot of voters who come out and just vote on the proposal and vote yes and then don't help the candidates. So that's something Democrats need to be focusing on. Make sure they get all those pro-choice voters to vote the whole ballot, not just the ballot proposal.
Well, I'm not sure that's going to be a terrible problem.
Okay.
Well, with that, we do need to wrap. Bernie Porn, Epic MRA, Michigan's most accurate pollster, thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your analysis. And thank you for your generous sponsorship of A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Thanks for having me.
Detroit news reporter Craig Mauger joins the conversation after these messages on A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm whose principals have more than four decades of experience measuring public opinion on federal, state, and local issues, from who's ahead in a race for governor or Congress to local support for a proposed zoning change.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, state agencies, local governments, and membership organizations across the state. Whether it's measuring voter opinions about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation enjoys public support, Epic MRA has been Michigan's premier go-to pollster for 30 years.
Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
When candidates and government leaders need the facts about their voters, they turn to Practical Political Consulting.
PPC has served political candidates, organizations, campaigns, and businesses for more than 45 years. They work with savvy campaigns to provide the best voter lists available in Michigan, as well as campaign consulting, graphic design, and polling at competitive prices.
Over their storied history, PPC has worked with thousands of campaigns, providing them with, as the New York Times once said, quote, the best lists possible in this competitive state, along with unique and individualized strategy.
They've worked with small campaigns for rural school board, all the way up to occupants of the White House. They are also renowned for their work with ballot initiatives, both for challenges and protections.
Find out more. Go to www.practicalpoliticalconsulting.com or call 517-351-5105.
Show your support for preserving our republic at The A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
State Republicans held their nominating convention last weekend. Unlike the totally calm and confident Democratic Party state convention, the GOP gathering combined some sharp partisan elbowing with a facade of unity at the end.
So it's no surprise that a week earlier, the Democrats live streamed their entire state convention for any and all to watch, while Republicans did all they could to limit public viewing of their weekend. One of the few nonpartisans to see firsthand what happened was Detroit news reporter Craig Mauger. Welcome, Craig.
Hey, thank you all for having me.
Since the last time we saw Craig, he won a big state award. I've been teasing him. I'm surprised he returns my calls. But we're glad to have him as a guest again.
You know, there's always so much to talk about. And, you know, not only has Craig, emerged as one of the top political reporters, but one of the most prolific reporters. It seems like you're filing stories 23, 24 hours a day. I wake up and there's like three stories from Craig overnight and then, you know, another 10 during the day. You know, you're certainly out there making passing along a lot of news and reporting on a lot of happenings. And there's been a lot to talk about through this summer in Michigan politics. Here we are roughly 10 weeks out from the election. The Republicans just had their convention. What's the big news this week?
I mean, there's always a twist and turn. We'll probably have about 50 more before we get to November 8th. 2022. But I think the big news this week is still the fallout of the Michigan Republican Party convention. I think that's one of the big pieces right now. This convention, I think, revealed where the Michigan GOP is at right now and maybe where it's going to be at for the next 2 years. Because as you know, Jeff, these delegates who are at the convention are essentially going to be in power for 2 years. They're going to pick the next party chairman. They're going to have a say in a lot of policy decisions going forward. And what we saw at the convention on Saturday was that these delegates are loyal followers of Matt DiPerno and Christina Caramo. Those two individuals, these people that rose to prominence questioning spreading unproven claims of fraud about the 2020 election. These two people got the loudest applause from the convention delegates. The more Democrats go after these two individuals, the more these delegates love them. Attorney General Dana Nessel's office refers Matt DiPerno for a special prosecutor, essentially. The delegates love him even more because they see this idea that law enforcement's going after Republicans like Donald Trump and Matt DiPerno. And I mean, he got a resounding applause at the convention. He brokered a deal that prevented the convention from going off the rails. And there's a question of whether Shane Hernandez would have made it through this convention had it not been for Matt DiPerno standing up for him.
Well, I agree with that assessment. I mean, I'm clearly not a Republican insider any longer and was not backstage or working the convention floor like in the old days. But watching in understanding how those work, it was clear that those delegates, a super majority of those delegates came into that convention on Saturday looking for a fight. They mm-hmm. had their fight up and they were ready to hand the so-called establishment, send them a message. And they were going to, there was every bit the prospect that even though Ralph Rebant is not a household name, even in Republican circles, that because he wasn't the establishment / Tudor Dixon choice, he was poised to become the lieutenant governor pick in defiance of what Tudor Dixon wanted. And it was only because Matt DiPerno stepped in and gave his endorsement in nomination of Hernandez and had made sure that everybody was going to line up accordingly, that went smoothly. Because what parties want at those August nominating conventions is that they become a cheerleading, get the grassroots excited, focus on the partisan opposition. And instead, this had every prospect to be, a circular firing squad.
It could have gotten very bad for the Michigan GOP on Saturday if things had gone a little differently. I mean, in many ways, Matt DiPerno saved the party from a major problem on Saturday because, I mean, these delegates, there were enough grassroots delegates to replace the Macomb County delegation by a supermajority margin. They could have then used that power that they had to remove Ron Weiser as the convention chair, to change other rules about how the day was going to go. But DiPerno kind of stepped into this gap and prevented all of that from happening. I mean, this convention could have gone into the night had DiPerno not brokered this deal to say, you guys stop challenging the rules. We'll give you the voice vote on lieutenant. We'll give you the paper ballot vote on lieutenant governor and we'll be done with this. So just a fascinating few hours. I mean, the Republic and I said this earlier, but these delegates are now, one of their next big decisions is going to be who is the next chair of the Republican Party. And these delegates they're going to want someone who's an outsider. They're going to want someone in the DiPerno kind of mode, someone that DiPerno and Caramo sign off on. And that's going to be fascinating to watch.
Sounds like, the Maddox, right? Michonne Maddox was really kind of the power behind I don't say the throne, but behind the scenes here, even though she's got a very visible job. And she and Matt and others worked to elect a lot of these precinct delegates that you're talking about on Saturday on Craig. But she was nowhere to be seen. I mean, she was there, but no role. And she and her husband were out recruiting state House candidates, part of an effort apparently to boost Matt and maybe be next leader in the House, state House. That hasn't panned out so well. And now Weiser also seems to be in eclipse along with the Maddox, based on what you saw on Saturday. Craig, is that a fair assessment?
I mean, I think she is standing in a very difficult position where she is the co-chair for Ron Weiser, who is seen as kind of the old guard Republican. And people are critical of him within the party currently. But at the same time, Michonne is tied to a lot of these grassroots delegates. Her kind of infrastructure in Oakland County recruited a lot of these people. People who are associated with Michonne are helping run Christina Caramo's campaign. She's kind of tied to all of these people. I think it kind of leaves her in a position where she can't go in any direction too openly because it will alienate part of the party that she's trying to keep together the best that she can. You know, I think Michonne is my guess from talking to delegates is she's still popular among many of these delegates. They still see her as a grassroots kind of a grassroots leader within the party. But I think her favorability among these delegates has gone down somewhat over the last 2 years, given the frustration that they have with Ron Weiser. I mean, Michonne had spoken out in support of Eric Castiglia, who now we're getting really into the weeds, but Eric Castiglia was the Macomb County chair that Ron Weiser supported, whose slate of delegates was thrown out on Saturday. So, I mean, there's so many different things happening here. There is some chatter. I have nothing to confirm that this is going to happen, but there's some speculation that Perry Johnson, the former gubernatorial candidate, might be interested in running for party chair one day or having some say over who the next party chair is. So that could boost Michonne. I mean, there's just a ton of different possibilities here.
There's been a lot of kind of soap opera intrigue leading up to this convention and the pick of the lieutenant governor. And would she, Dixon, be able to get her lieutenant governor pick through? It would have been, I think, a completely different ballgame had Garrett Soldano or Ryan Kelly thrown their hat in the ring. But what all of this has done is it's kind of forestalled a lot of discussion about the complete and total lack of money that any of these candidates, Tudor Dixon, Matt DiPerno, and Christina Caramo have, and how August has been this wasteland for the Republicans when it comes to advertising and building their candidates to general election voters. On this episode, we also talked to Bernie Porn about his poll that was out last week showing Whitmer with a 11-point lead and Benson and Nessel with leads outside the margin of error. The fighting or the possibility of fighting, you know, gets attention, and that's where news is made. But elections are won and lost with money and everything else. And you got to have both. And right now the Republicans only seem to have everything else and not a lot of money.
I think that you talk to Republicans, as I'm sure you guys probably both hear from Republicans that chat with you kind of on the side. I mean, that's the biggest thing that some Republicans are fearful of right now. Where has Tudor Dixon been on the campaign trail? We haven't seen a lot of events. We haven't seen, you know, her touring the state, talking to local reporters on TV stations, local news reporters all over the state, which is kind of what gubernatorial candidates normally do once they become the nominee, trying to raise their name ID. If you don't have money, which the party doesn't have right now, how do you reach people? That's how you reach people. And we haven't seen that yet. So there's a lot of Republicans concerned about what has happened over the last month since she became the nominee. And what has Governor Whitmer's campaign been doing? Bombarding Tudor Dixon with millions of dollars in TV ads that are trying to define her. And she has not been able to really make a statewide response to that yet.
Speaking of money, one area where Matt DiPerno has raised some money is that $400,000 allegedly to stop, detect, who knows, election fraud. And he continues, it seems, to evade questions about that money, what happened to it, what he used it for, etc. I think he raised more money for that fund, Jeff, than he did for his own campaign so far. Certainly got more cash on hand, apparently, in that fund. Craig, what's the latest on what's going on with DiPerno and that money and, you know, this ongoing now referred investigation to a special prosecutor about this tampering, this damaging of election equipment around the state that DiPerno was apparently involved in?
I had a 40-minute interview with Matt DiPerno on Monday, and this is one of the main questions that I wanted to try to get him on the record of, because he has distanced himself in some ways from these individuals who actually went out. There's a group of people who went out, obtained these tabulators, convinced these clerks to give them tabulators, transported the tabulators to Airbnbs or an apartment or a hotel rooms in Oakland County. I mean, this is all verifiable of what happened. Clerks are stating this has happened. There's documented evidence of this happening. He has distanced himself. These people getting the tabulators, transporting them, then running tests on the tabulators. DiPerno's kind of backed a little bit away. And my question is, you raised this $400,000. You had all these experts from all over the country, so self-described experts, coming to Michigan, working on these tabulators, filing reports for your lawsuit. Did the money you raised fund what this whole effort? Because as you know, this had to have been a pretty expensive effort to run all of this, to get people's airplane tickets to come here, to put them up in hotels if they were staying here while they were doing this, to write these briefs. I'm doubting these people did this for free. Maybe they did. But Matt DiPerno continues to not say anything about what happened with this hundreds of thousands of dollars that he raised while he was challenging the election results in Michigan. He will not say anything about it. He wouldn't say it in the convention race when Tom Leonard was his opponent on the Republican side and Tom Leonard was challenging him on it. Now that he is the Republican nominee for attorney general, he still won't say where this money came from or where it went. He is saying that attorney-client privilege prevents him from saying this. His client, William Bailey, which is a resident of Antrim County, told me it was none of my business yesterday.
He didn't plead the fifth, hey, when you asked him those questions during the interview.
No, attorney-client privilege was the answer.
Well, I think we'll see if it goes to if a special prosecutor or when a special prosecutor materializes through that process, that will likely be at least a line of concern that we'll read some more about. I don't know that will happen here in the next weeks before Election Day, or if this will happen afterward. But it's certainly a very This is all very intriguing. And, you know, I think it's, Matt DiPerno is acting a bit like Donald Trump here in kind of litigating this potential criminal case where he could be indicted, and kind of litigating it in the earned media now as if that's going to somehow impact the judicial system, whether he's indicted, whether there's a grand jury, whether this goes to trial. It seems to be the kind of strategy that most defense attorneys would say, you know, shut up and stop talking so much.
He can't really do that because he's running for statewide office. No one knows him, and he's got to get out there to get that earned media. So he's going to have to answer these questions. No, I mean,
I would think so. I mean, it's certainly a legitimate question. Though, I mean, he takes umbrage whenever you raise it. That somehow you're working with the Nestle campaign. I can tell you, somebody who is working with the Nestle campaign, you've never been on one of our calls.
I don't know if that's going to help, but all right.
Yeah, I mean, this is just an extraordinary situation. Now, we've never had an attorney general candidate under criminal investigation. I mean, you can't deny that. The attorney general staff took it as far as they could before they had to turn it over and ask for a special prosecutor. But it's just extraordinary. So, I mean, what does he do in a debate? You know, does he, I guess, stonewall and continue to say that kind of stuff? I don't know how that's going to sit with voters. But all that being said, I got to tell you, Craig, and you were there at the convention, he seems like Teflon. All this stuff, you know, bounces off of him, at least when it comes to these Republican grassroots precinct delegates and members. It is like Trump, and I called him a Trump mini-me this week on Twitter, that it just seems to make him stronger, at least in that relatively small group of people who now control the Republican Party in the state. Is that what you saw on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a guy that might be at the peak of his power among the Republican Party right now. I mean, if not the peak, it's climbing. And people kind of responded to me when I made a similar comment on social media. They said, how can a guy who only has $125,000 in his campaign account be powerful? Well, it's two different audiences. Reaching the wealthy donors that fund candidates is one thing. Being popular among the delegates who do the work on the ground and go door to door and their volunteers is a separate thing. And it's the Republican Party is seeing this division right now between kind of the establishment, so-called establishment, the donors, and these grassroots activists who are motivated by Trump. DiPerno is firmly in line with this grassroots base where the party is heading. I mean, these people love Matt DiPerno, and Matt DiPerno, I mean, you just watch him on Twitter. He's been a lawyer. He's been doing trials for 25 years. He's very skilled at redirecting. You ask him one thing, he talks about something else. You try to ask him again, he talks about something else. Hey, what happened with these tabulators? He turns and said, well, what about this tabulator that I put in a brief 2 years ago? And it's kind of like, then you have to go figure out what is this tabulator from 2 years ago that he's raising? What is he talking about with this? So, I mean, he is skilled at, I mean, trying to respond to this criticism and these questions.
Now, if he does go on to lose in November, I think watching what I saw this last weekend at the Republican convention, I don't think that's likely to halt or put any real tarnish on his popularity with those Republican delegates, with the grassroots in the Republican Party. I think that kind of power that he exercised at this convention, he'll continue to exercise going forward. And at that the convention, presumably next February or March, where the Republicans will elect their next chairman, you know, an alliance between Matt DiPerno and Perry Johnson that may or may not include a Michonne and Matt Maddock, you know, John Yobbs at the nexus of all this, you know, for getting down into the weeds here for those in Michigan politics understand these names. That would be an unstoppable force at a Republican convention, you know. So if they wanted to have some kind of, like you had this marriage this time of Ron Weiser and his fundraising prowess and his connection to the old, you know, the old leadership wing of the party, and Michonne Maddock with the grassroots Trump, you know, that marriage here, Perry Johnson, where he hasn't been the fundraiser like Weiser has over his career. He certainly runs in those circles and has that credibility and can write big checks, you know, because the guy lit $7 million on fire and didn't get on the ballot. So he can, you know, bring that, you know, some money to the table with Matt DiPerno's fans among the grassroots. That would be, I think that in some combination, you'll see that that duo continue to play a role in the Michigan Republican Party.
I think that's a great point, and it's likely that whoever wants to be the next chair is going to have to work with Matt DiPerno. I mean, I think that's one of two things. Whoever wants to be the next chair is probably going to have to, in some ways, go through Matt DiPerno because of how, you know, widespread his influence is. And maybe if it's not Matt DiPerno they're going through, maybe there's an alternative route through Christina Caramo, but they kind of seem to work in lockstep. And then number two is, I think a fascinating question, and this is all a hypothetical, but these Republican candidates who are so powerful among the delegates and rose to prominence question the last election, what happens if they lose in November 2022? Is there an incentive then to say, well, I challenge these results because that has worked in the past? I mean, these are all things to kind of watch and that will play out over the next few months if it goes in that direction.
I've got to ask you too. A word we have not uttered in this conversation is DeVos, who are essentially, you know, they have their own basically parallel party organization out there in terms of PACs and C4s and so forth. What's going on with them in the middle of all of this? They endorsed Dixon, you know, funded a super PAC, which was a big part, I think, of getting her through the primary. Where are they in all this? Was there any mention of them at all on Saturday, Craig? I mean, are they perceived as players by these grassroots folks?
I think there was not an open mention of them from what I can remember in speeches or anything, but I think there were individuals who worked for the DeVos entities who were promoting Shane Hernandez and Tudor Dixon. I think you're going to see, you know, the DeVos family heavily pushing Tudor Dixon and Shane Hernandez, and I wouldn't be surprised if that means helping Matt DiPerno or helping Christina Caramo down the road if they start, you know, helping those two individuals, because I think this connection between Tudor Dixon's gubernatorial campaign and the DeVos family's hopes, I mean, she's the candidate that they want. They got her through this primary election. I mean, you had Betsy DeVos. I mean, this is remarkable. Betsy DeVos writing a handwritten note to former President Trump asking him to support Tudor Dixon. I mean, that is when I saw that, I mean, I was just really surprised by that. I mean, that's quite a move. Usually these things take place in phone calls, I would think, but that was an interesting moment. It shows how in they are on Tudor Dixon. So I think they're going to continue to be a force. I think some of these grassroots candidates like Matt DiPerno are trying to win the DeVos family over to help fund their campaigns. And we'll see if they start doing that or not.
Yeah, you know, the DeVos is, and she hasn't won yet, obviously, Dixon, but they haven't had this kind of gubernatorial candidate kind of in their pocket, I'll just say this, since Dick ran in 06. I mean, Snyder didn't do their bidding. There were things they worked on, you know, right to work and other things, of course. And, of course, Whitmer's not an ally or a friend of theirs at all. But if they get Tudor Dixon into the governor's office, for them, in terms of their anti-public education agenda and all of the things they want, it seems like a golden opportunity. So I understand why they're investing in the way you just described, Craig. This has been the best chance they've had in almost 20 years to take control of the executive office.
She Tudor Dixon's education platform does line up very closely to what the DeVos family's education platform is. And, you know, it's interesting thinking back, as you mentioned that, I was thinking back on the past gubernatorial elections. I mean, in 2018, the last one, the DeVos family was divided in the Republican primary. Some of them were with Brian Kelly. Some of them were with Bill Schuette. So this is a little bit different than that situation because the whole family said out of this field, Tudor Dixon's the way to go.
Yeah, I think having known and worked with and worked for them over the years, I think at the end of the day, still Tudor Dixon as governor is still priority 1B. I would say it's a top priority, but I think 1A priority for them is maintaining Republican control of the legislature, because they know they can get through these legislative initiatives like the two that they have if they have Republican controlled legislature. And 1A, that Republican control of the legislature, is dependent, especially with these new maps, on keeping the top of the ticket close enough where if they win, great. You know, it'd be wonderful to have a governor and a Republican legislature, but we want a gubernatorial candidate who's going to be close enough to make sure that we have Republicans running the state house and state senate. That's where I think their true goal is.
I think from talking to Republicans, that's what I'm hearing as well, that there is a desire to help Tudor Dixon, because if Gretchen Whitmer beats Tudor Dixon by double digits, all of a sudden you're in a situation where there's a real threat to losing the House and the Senate. I mean, they've controlled the Senate for decades, more than three decades.
Almost 40 years.
Yeah, they're in a real situation where if there is a calamity at the top of the ticket, that they lose both the Senate and the House, which would be, you know, going at the beginning of this year, no one would have thought that that was a possibility.
Yeah. I think that, you know, certainly when you look at the loss, I mean, Bill Schuette lost by 9-10 points in 2018. Mm-hmm. And the maps that the Republicans were running under were much less favorable to the Democrats than the ones that they're running under now. And so if Tudor Dixon were to suffer the same fate, 43% or whatever is at the top of the ticket with these maps and the 3-seat differential in both chambers right now for the Democrats, mm-hmm. it would seem there's a really good chance that would pick up one or both chambers at that point. And so they've got to keep the race close. And when I say close, I mean within 5, 4, 3 points. And realistically, that's what we're looking at. The in this highly charged partisan atmosphere where there are still issues that favor Republicans nationally, Joe Biden's popularity, the inflation, gas prices, all that kind of stuff still gives Republicans some advantages in this election year. Now, you know, a lot of what you know, people, I've said, I've got a hashtag red wave my ass on Twitter. I don't think that we're looking right now at any great, that this is going to be some Republican landslide. I think we're really back to a neutral environment as we're sitting here on, you know, close to Labor Day. It seems like the Republicans have a shot, less of a shot to win these top top of the ticket races than they do to maybe pick off a congressional race in Michigan and keep control of these the legislative chambers. And we can't forget they are going to be putting money into Brian Zara's reelection because they only have, from the Republican perspective, they only have two reliable Republicans on the court right now, and that's Viviano and Zara. They don't count Beth Clement as a reliable Republican vote on most issues.
I know we're short on time. One last question. I got to ask you two. I always try to ask you two a question when I'm on. Jeff might not be able to answer this because these are maybe internal secrets, but Mark can. If you are Dana Nessel and Jocelyn Benson, do you debate Matt DiPerno and Christina Caramo? Mark?
I think not. I mean, I think you would have to deal with, look, there's going to be some blowback, right? The free press and good government types are going to say, oh, how can you not debate and so forth? But, you know, strategically, they have no money, very little name recognition, terrible positions. You got incumbents who are outraising them by multiples. What's in it for the incumbents to give them that kind of platform? On top of which, with DiPerno, you're going to get the same kind of answers you got, Craig. He's going to refuse to talk about one of the most important issues in the race. You know, you're under criminal investigation. You want to tell the public of Michigan why and defend yourself, and he'll refuse. So, you know, that's where I come from on this. I would keep debates to a minimum, and if there's a way to avoid them, if I'm Nessel and Benson, I do it.
No comment.
I'll take it, I guess.
I don't disagree with anything Mark said as a strategist here. So.
Yeah, you know, look, and you all know me. I come at this from a very partisan perspective. Like, you know, there could be some blowback. And the timing is an important thing. I mean, it's a big difference having a debate the last week of October as opposed to mid-September, right? Mm-hmm. Race might be over by the time you agree to have a debate and where it occurs. I mean, and Jeff has gone through all this stuff and he can't comment. You know, do you hold it on some obscure, you know, place where nobody actually watches? Or is it a big, you know, public thing which is going to get rebroadcast and so forth? I mean, all those are considerations as well. But these challengers have got to dug themselves a real hole in terms of them being able to argue that they're entitled to a debate.
Well, the last word, Craig, before we wrap here.
From me?
Yes, from you.
Hey, I think it's going to be a very memorable last few months, and anyone that can say they can directly predict what's going to happen, just don't believe them.
Agreed. Craig Mauger, the Detroit News, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll wrap things up for this week. We encourage you to send your questions, comments, and suggestions. Our email, therepublicpodcast@gmail.com.
And please help share our non-classified podcast with a wider audience by adding your review on wherever you get your podcasts. If the Republic is still standing, Jeff and I will return in a week. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Have a good Labor Day weekend.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on all major podcast sites. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.